So the question was, can we hear from somebody who's blind and is not doing anything related to blindness? I said, yeah, sure, we could find somebody. And we were told somebody. When I mentioned the name, you'll get some familial reference there. The gentleman's an attorney. Gentleman's not in Syracuse anymore. He's in some small town somewhere in the middle of the state. Remember, one of the charter members of the chapter at large. He used to be a member of the Syracuse chapter, and then he decided to become a member of the chapter at large and move. At any rate, a committed Federationist, a committed blind guy, just a pleasure to work with. I've worked with him on the executive board. He was a wonderful resource, and just a great chair, first of all, and a wise man. I use that, you don't use phrases like that usually. You know, the wise men were the ones who came to the manger. This gentleman is also a wise man. So I'd like to give you, for whatever he cares to say, and to explain to you, you will find out why he's on the agenda in the time allotted to him. I'd like to give you Luis Mendez.
The Hollywoods and the Sturgeons are being wiped out by detergents. Gotta swim and birds gotta fly, but they don't last long if they try. Pollution, pollution, you can use the latest toothpaste. And then rinse your mouth with industrial waste.
That's very, very accurate. Dr. and Mrs. Maurer. All right, is this better? Okay, all right. Dr. and Mrs. Maurer, Carl, Mindy, all the officers, members of the board, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much, and Carl, thank you for such a kind introduction. I was asked to talk with you for a few minutes about what it took to bring clean water back to Onondaga Lake. And from that, I guess you should surmise that I have spent the bulk of my legal career practicing environmental law and related to that contract law, primarily on issues of basically negotiating contracts for large public works projects, including major development of major sewage treatment plants and things of that kind. Onondaga Lake is located in Syracuse, New York, although there are a lot of towns and villages that also border it. It's a relatively small lake. And for the more than a century, it was primarily used for the disposal, for the basically the dumping of industrial waste and sewage. Prior to that, Onondaga Lake and its shore had been a prime recreational area, renowned for its fish, in particular cisco and whitefish, and it had along its shorelines many recreational parks and beaches. But obviously, within 20 or 30 years of the development of significant industries and the growth of the city of Syracuse into a major industrial city in the early 20th century, all of those uses pretty much came to an end. The lake became the source of a lot of jokes about the stinky lake. If you can imagine a several pairs of heavily used socks stored in a dark, mildewy, damp, mildewy environment for a month and then you pulled them out. That's kind of what you got when you buy Onondaga Lake on a hot day. Today, Onondaga Lake has become, again, a very, very different lake. After many years of hard work, Onondaga Lake now has over 70 species of fish. The water is very clear. I mean, it's not perfect. There are problems in the southern part of the lake, but it is possible to swim in Onondaga Lake. In fact, in 2015, we hosted the first sanctioned swimming event in Onondaga Lake along the northern shore, and there were upwards of 60 swimmers who participated. And one of my clients actually took a 2-mile swim from an area in Onondaga Lake, which I will talk about in a few minutes, all the way to almost to the Seneca River. And that was something that had not been done in over 70 years. So how did that happen? It happened because of, frankly, citizen action. When I did this presentation, I thought, okay, how can I make this relevant? But here's the Clean Water Act allows citizen suits to sue polluters. And one of our local citizen groups did that. They sued the county, who is my client. And then a year later, the state of New York sued Allied Signal, which was one of the major industrial polluters. We then, now, the suit with between the citizens group and the county was settled after the state became a party in 1989. And at the time I took over the case in 1992, my client realized that the settlement was in its dead form was going to cost over $1 billion of local dollars. And, you know, to put it mildly, they freaked out. Like, you know, what are we going to do? Our budget is $1 billion, barely. You know, there's no way we can take on this kind of debt. We have huge user fees. We're already losing our industrial base. And the challenge became this, that under laws governing settlements, once you enter into an agreement, it's very, very difficult to undo that agreement. It really... because although it's a contract, it's enforced, it's treated like a judgment, and you have to show extraordinary circumstances, things that you would not have foreseen at the time that you entered into the settlement. And, you know, there was, that's a very challenging standard. It's very, very difficult, if not impossible, to meet. So we had to come about this from the client's perspective in a different way, which was, what we really need is, if we're going to do this, we need two things. We need a more modest program, and we need outside assistance, because we're just not going to be able to undertake this on our own. So, you know, after some thought, we decided to do a really in-depth economic study of what the impact was going to be on the county and the community, in particular focusing on the city of Syracuse, if our client had to foot the bill for the program as it was then being considered. And not surprisingly, we developed the facts indicated that the impacts on the county as a whole would be economically significant, and even worse in the city of Syracuse, where you know, there was a high concentration of poverty. So we used those findings to shift the focus away from a legal solution to a political solution. And over the next 4 years, we entered into a long series of negotiations with the state, occasionally interrupted by litigation when, you know, people thought either that it was taking too long and they tried to accelerate it by going to court. And finally, when we felt that the state had unreasonably rejected the county's second proposal, basically, and the state took the position that the county was being difficult and maybe they needed to appoint a special master. I suggested, and the client agreed, that we take the unusual position to push back and say, yeah, it's not us, Judge. We do agree that this is difficult. You know, the state is simply not recognizing the economic issues here. So, yeah, maybe a special master really is what we need in order to knock heads and get everybody in the room and try to work this out. At which point the state say, no, we really didn't mean, we think we can work this out. It really, you know, and we did over the next 2 years of very long days. I think Kate and Mary can attest to the fact that I would often leave very early in the morning and come back at 10, 11, midnight. We worked out a settlement, and as a result of the settlement, the county was given the opportunity to try and demonstrate different technological approaches. So we're all done, right? Wrong. What happened after that is that the settlement still called for the construction of 4 fairly large treatment facilities located primarily in residential areas in the inner city of Syracuse. And the community in those areas pushed back. And they were like, you know what, this is... And they contended that this was basically an environmental justice issue, that, you know, the county was locating these facilities in poor neighborhoods because that's, you know, basically that's where they could put them with little opposition. In point of fact, from a, you know, from a technology perspective, the facilities were really being located where all of the pipes came together, so it was the easiest point to get all of this material together and treat it, you know, and then discharge treated waste into the streams. But be that as it may, the city, which had been supportive, then started to refuse to sell the county the land. and it triggered another round of litigation, this time between the county and the city, which we eventually settled after about five more years of litigation. And what happened as a result of that settlement is by the time that second settlement came about, technology was once again changing. And then the person who led the fight in the Common Council to not sell the county the land became our county executive. And of course, you know, this I was in an appointed position, and my immediate thought is, I'm going to be out of a job in 6 weeks. But she decided to keep me on, but she said, we need a different approach. We need to respond to the community's concerns. And so we renegotiated the whole consent decree. Now, mind you, this is the third time now, okay, that we're having to do this. So we went through this, renegotiated the whole approach, this time incorporating, instead of large facilities, we used a new, relatively new approach, which really relies, we call it green infrastructure, but what it is basically trying to use materials, landscaping, trees, all to try and capture as much of the rain before it gets into the sewer system so that it then isn't discharged. And we did that. And instead of building the additional treatment facilities, we were able to make the storage facilities that would have been required as an alternative a lot smaller. And so with that in place, the thinking was that we would be able to significantly reduce the flow of untreated sewage to the creeks. A big problem really came because the in New York, when you're involved in environmental litigation, you have the Department of Environmental Conservation, which sets policy, but you also have the Attorney General, which has an Environmental and Natural Resources Unit, and they often set their own policies. And so, in theory, the state is represented by the Attorney General, but they were, in this particular case, pulling in different directions. So it became challenge to try and work out that settlement. Anyway, to make a long story short, we did finalize that third agreement and went ahead and started to build the new facilities. And the end result is that, again, that in conjunction with the treatment at the sewage treatment plant has resulted in what I shared with you earlier, a dramatic improvement. At the same time, Allied Signal was also undertaking a cleanup of the toxic waste in Onondaga Lake. And so as a result, Onondaga Lake now was ready by 2014 for a very significant undertaking, a very significant project, which was the development and construction of what is now known as the Lakeview Amphitheater. And I was very, very privileged to be a part of that project. The amphitheater basically is a 18,000 seat venue located on what had been one of the most polluted areas of the shores of Onondaga Lake. It, from start to finish, we went through the financing, the environmental review. We developed what the state's first design build contract for a major facility, which meant that instead of designing something, I mean, getting a, an engineer to design something and then getting a new contractor to build it, we were able to hire someone to both design and build the facility. So we went from nothing. And as part of this project, we also had to negotiate a remediation agreement, basically a cleanup of the site with with Honeywell, which was basically had merged with Allied Signal. We did all of that starting in February of 2014. And the facility was open for the first concert September of 2015. So in little less than a year, we went from a barren site to a major entertainment venue and have basically brought thousands of people back to that part of Onondaga Lake. So what are the takeaways here? Basically, how is that relevant to what we and the NFB are trying to do for blind people, both in New York and throughout the United States? First and foremost, we do have legislation. We have the ADA on our side. We have Section 504 to build from. But to me, the most important thing, the law is a tool. But an even bigger tool continues to be the public and public acceptance of what we are doing. Basically reaching out not just to our community, but reaching beyond our community to families, friends, and getting families, friends, and other people interested and involved in understanding of why things like Braille literacy remain important, why is important to remove barriers to housing, to employment, why really vigorously advocating for things like website accessibility, for accessibility of forms, for accessibility of programs that are used in employment to manage everything from health records to finances to data to management, why it is important to have those things be accessible. And why is it important? Because with those doors being open, blind people can truly, we can truly lead the lives that we want to live. We don't have to rely on family. We don't have to rely on friends. We can support ourselves, support our families, and heck, you know, even basically be able to help out friends who are not blind if they ever find themselves in need. So the takeaway as far as the cleanup of Onondaga Lake for me is marshal the community support and the political resources, because they, along with law, are what are required to really translate our philosophy into results.
Thank you, Luis. The takeaway for me from that whole thing is that blind people can be anywhere they want to be and do anything they want to do to better the community. And Luis, thank you for doing that. I don't live near Onondaga Lake, but it's nice to know there's clean water around again, and Tom Lehrer has got an outdated song.